All right, so we're back. I'm Chris Adams, and I've got Hunter McCamey here with me. This is Build to Bite. We do so much rod building, but we actually spend a lot more time on the water than we do rod building. And we talk about stories. We want to talk fishing. We get to kind of let our hair down a little bit now. We have a rod building section of this Build to Bite, where we talk about a flipping stick, among other things, moving down the road. But yeah, now we get to just talk about fishing and tell a funny story and see where that takes us.
Yeah. And, you know, I think a good place to start here is, in that rod building video that you mentioned, we talk about the FP series, the flipping and pitching blank series from MHX. And there is an origin story there that I think is really cool. It started actually out by an accident, an accident that happened. And, you know, many, many years later, now we're here talking about these blanks and how good they are to build out as a flipping stick. But there's a cool backstory here, and I'm going to let Chris share that with y'all.
Yeah, so this was probably 2012, I want to say, because we had just kind of met and started fishing together. We were fishing out of the MHX Ranger boat, and we were not using flipping and pitching series blanks because they hadn't been created yet. So we had to go through some different flipping style blanks. We would put different stuff on the deflection chart and go, well, that one's too stiff, or that one doesn't have enough of a moderate fast action, or this one doesn't have enough power. So we settled on a swim bait blank, and that was the SWB 956, right?
Right.
So that blank is 7'11", so it's a flipping stick length. Even though it's a little long, I used to cut the butt out of it a little bit. But it had the moderate fast that you would throw a really big swim bait, or like when we would throw an A rig on it or something.
Right.
And it just worked. That was the one we liked the best. It had the right tip size and everything. So when we were meeting for a tournament, I asked you, and I was like, hey, can I get one or two more of those? Because I want one rod for an ounce, one for a 3/4 ounce, you know, so you're not having to retie and change stuff up. And we were fishing on the St. John's River. And it was funny because I actually just saw a photo from that the Mighty River Recovery guys posted.
Right.
When they were like, oh, we're in Woodruff or Dexter, we need some photos. And I was like scrolling and I was like,
I recognize that.
Who was that goofball behind? And that was me acting a fool after we caught a big fish. But
right.
So we were there for a tournament and you were in that old green Chevy, I think. It was blowing that morning. And we fished the 2 days, and I think we finished third or fourth behind Cox. And I was like, hey, did you bring those blanks? And you're like, oh, yeah, I got them. And I'm like, okay, cool. So we start taking stuff out of the truck, and, you know, car doors and rod blanks have always been at odds. Whether it was a tailgate or a truck door, there has been a lot of loved ones lost in that problem. So Hunter's getting the stuff out, and I say, hey, you know, be careful, the wind's blowing really hard. And you had grabbed a couple rod blanks, and one rod blank slid because they were across the front seat, you know? And one rod blank slid and went in between the door jamb and the door, and the wind blew that door almost shut. But the reason that it couldn't shut all the way is because there was a rod blank in there, and it crushed the butt of that SWB 956. And we were like, oh, that's not good. So we laughed about it, and I went home. I took the rod blank with me, and I measured how much of a crush, you know, section it was. And I was like, oh, that's not too bad, but I don't know. We'll see. There are certain lengths of rod blank that you can cut out of it before you start changing actions and power and stuff like that. But I remember cutting the blank and then checking it to see if there was any splinters or any breakages in it. And it ended up being like 7.5 and a half or something. I mean, I cut like 6 inches out of the butt of this rod, which I wouldn't normally advise. But I checked it and I was like, oh, it's still pretty good. So I built it anyway. And not too long after that, we were going to Lake Okeechobee and we were going to be flipping reeds, which I love to flip reeds. So I am also a big fan of the Medlock jig. So rather than like punching mats and doing stuff, we were going to flip a Medlock jig. And I was like, hey, check this build out. And you were like, oh, is that the one? I was like, oh, that's the one. So I had a 3/4 ounce Medlock with a trailer on it. And it just was it. I remember you even fishing it, even though you were complaining about my right hand retrieve reel. But
which we'll talk about in a second.
Yeah. So I started fishing that and handed it to you. And you were like, man, this one's the one. And so then, you know, kind of the rest is history in that, especially when we brought it to your dad here at Mudhole. And we were like, we don't have anything in this length that fishes just like this. And so that SWB 956, which ended up being 866, sort of, you know, down the road, or I guess that would have been, no, that would have been an 896. So when we talk about these numbers, the first two numbers are inches and the last number is power. So an SWB 956 is 95 inches, 950, and then a 6 is the power. So I cut that one just under 7.6, and so that was 89. So it would have been an 896.
Yeah.
And so then your dad like got to work on it. He loved it. He played around with it a little, got to work on it, and then was like, well, we can't have just one. Right. So then we also thought that the 7.11 was a little too long. So Bob was like, all right, well, we got a 7.11, and then the next one down is a 7.6. So why don't we just meet in the middle and call it 7.9? And we were like, okay, that works. And we also upped the power on one and dropped the power on another one. And that's how we got the FP 885.
Mm-hmm.
So we made it 7.4 at a 5 power, 885. And then in the rod building portion of this where we talk about, you know, in the other video where we talk about putting a flipping stick together, we're using the FP 936, which is... that's the one. If you have to buy a flipping stick tomorrow and you can only have one, it's the 936. Yes. So that's where the flipping and pitching series came from, of a boo-boo that Hunter broke a rod blank in a car door. And
yeah,
here we are, what, 13 years later?
Right.
Something like that? Yeah, 13 years later. And it's probably one of the best-selling line of blanks that there is. I've even caught a sailfish on a 936. We snook fish with an 885. We do all kinds of stuff because it has the right action and power. It doesn't know that it's a flipping stick.
Right.
It just knows it's good and it can do it.
Yeah. Huge credit goes to my dad, Bob, and also Todd Vivian, you know, on the blank design side for really dialing in those blanks. Traditionally flipping sticks, you know, we still have a series under MHX called, you know, flipping stick, the FS, right?
Yeah.
FS 904, 905, et cetera. Traditionally flipping stick blanks had very large, you know, butt diameters. They were heavy in your hand and in some ways they didn't have the right action. So
felt a little like clubby.
Yeah, they did. So the great thing about, you know, kind of redesigning from the ground floor a brand new flipping and pitching series.
Yeah.
Is we could take some of the attributes that we did not like in prior, you know, flipping sticks or even flipping stick blanks and even swim bait blanks for that matter. And, you know, Todd and Bob were able to dial down the blank diameters, right? So we're not dealing with these huge butt diameters that are kind of a pain to add grips to and, you know, things like that.
Right.
And as we mentioned in the previous rod building video, the tip size. A lot of these, you know, former flipping stick blanks or even swim bait blanks had a 7, 7.5, maybe even an 8 tube size tip.
Right.
For these FP blanks, the 885, the 935, the 936, the 937, all of these have at least a 6.5 or under tube size. And for you rod builders out there, finding a size 7 tube in a tip top is not easy. We have them. We have some under Fuji and I think also American Tackle.
Yep.
But they are not very common. So And they were especially not common, you know, 12 or 13 years ago.
Yeah, or with like a small enough ring.
Right.
Like we would see flipping sticks, you go into the store and it'd be like, okay, well, that's a flipping stick. And you flex it on the floor and be like, okay, well, that's like sort of the right action and it feels good. And this is from like major manufacturers. And then you look at it, you look down the rod and there's like size eights all the way out. Right. And we're like, size eights? Like we use that on an offshore rod. And then of course, then you get a size eight tip top out there. And that's kind of ridiculous.
Yes.
So yeah, it was, I don't know, like most of the time people are like, oh, well, we build it from the butt up or we do whatever. But yeah, I mean, Bob and Todd were like, we have to address this tip top problem before we do anything else.
Right.
So yeah, we got them in 6.5s and then you can still use a 4 ring or a 4.5 or a 5. And it's like decent size guides, but you can still put more flipping stick.
Absolutely.
So that was like groundbreaking.
Yeah. So let's talk about flipping and pitching just as a technique, right? I think you'll agree with me on this. It is one of my favorite techniques to do, especially here in Florida, right? Even in the Southeast and even up in the some of the northern, you know, states, especially Wisconsin, Minnesota.
Yeah.
There's grass everywhere, depending on the time of the year. But in Florida, we have grass year-round.
For sure.
Now, some of the recent years where we are struggling with some of our grass and our waterways, but luckily we got a lot of conservation groups out there, especially yeah. Mighty River Recovery and other organizations that are helping revive the grass that was formerly in these bodies of water. But, you know, flipping and pitching is still one of the most popular techniques, especially in tournament bass fishing. You know,
oh, yeah.
You're looking for a big kicker. If you want to catch, you know, that 6, 7, 8 plus pounder, mm-hmm. flipping and pitching is typically the technique that a lot of guys, whether it's flipping mats in some of the winter months in, you know, December, January, February, those fish are under the mats.
Yep.
They're also cold. Obviously, that water temp is going to dip down into the, you know, 60s and 70s or even maybe sometimes a little bit lower than that. Those fish like to hide under that cover where it is a little bit warmer. And,
right.
and that's, you know, typically the time of the year that you're going to go in and punch the mats with 1.5 ounce or even up to a 2, 2.25 ounce weight sometimes if you have to. But flipping and pitching is not just about punching. It's yeah. probably one of my favorite techniques under the flipping and pitching category. But as Chris mentioned earlier, you know, we can flip and pitch reeds, lily pads, docks, and it can vary, you know, all the way down to maybe a 1/2 ounce weight with a beaver bait or something like that, a crawl style bait.
Yeah.
Again, all the way up to, you know, especially when you're punching mats, you know, using a 1.5 up to a 2 ounce weight with even downsizing to a very small bait, which a very popular wintertime bait, flipping bait or punching bait in Florida is a BB Cricket from
yeah.
Gambler. If you guys have not used the BB Cricket before, it is phenomenal for when those bass are really finicky and it's you get a cold front come through. They're not typically, unless they're very aggressive, they're not going to be biting a big 4 to 5 inch crawl or beaver style bait. They want, you know, they're finicky. They're really not in the mood to even eat. That BB Cricket can get the job done. So that's a little pro tip.
Yeah, and you know, too, like we're also fishing little baits like that because the cover is so heavy that you can't get a big bait through that mat. So, you know, if you are fishing up to a 2 ounce or 1.75 or 1.5 and you have to punch through there, if you have this big giant, you know, looks like a bluegill behind that big weight, it's not going to go through those mats.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, when those cold fronts do hit and the sun finally comes out and heats the top of those mats, it's going to heat underneath. So they're in the thickest stuff. So between not necessarily wanting to eat a big bait, but also if you can't get it through the mat, you're not going to get it bit. So that's one of those things that, you know, I think there's so many nuances in flipping and punching that, you know, people just think sometimes like, oh, I just need a broomstick with 60 pound braid and a big weight and a beaver bait. And it's like, well, there's a lot more to it than that.
For sure. Even adding in like a punch skirt or, you know, there's many, many ways you can go about that. Let's talk about our setup for a flipping stick.
Uh-huh.
So, and let's start with...
we argue about some stuff.
We do. Let's start with one of those, disagreements is, let's start with the reel and obviously the line to go with that. So I'm a big proponent. I grew up, fishing a left-handed bait casting reel.
Yeah.
Left is right. Right is wrong.
Okay.
But to each their own. It's one of those things to where, you know, if I'm flipping and pitching, I can use my right hand. I don't have to switch any time that I want to, you know, start fishing. I can make my flip and then immediately I'm good to go with my left hand. Now, I know you are a little bit different than some people when it comes to switching hands and things like that.
Yeah.
So I will give it to you, even though you're using a right hand reel, your technique is, there's no really delay or anything like that with switching hands.
No, it's called coordination. It's something that I have that obviously you don't have. But yeah, I just taught myself how to flip with my left hand so that, like you were saying, you will flip with your right hand and you'll go right to the reel. Well, I'll just flip my left hand and go right to the reel. So yeah, I mean, I can't cast very well left-handed. But I can flip better than I can reel left-handed. And there's a reason that, you know, big game reels and bait casters were only made right-handed for a reason. It's because right is right. That's all there is to it. But no, it's just having a little coordination. I don't know. It's just one of those things. But it was funny though, because before I started like really, really flipping when I was younger, I had a hard time like trying to be accurate and flip with my left hand. And it was just something you had to like, you just had to learn it. You just had to teach yourself. So it was either, do I go out and buy a bunch of different reels and like get rid of all my righties? Because you also fish all left-handed, right?
All left-handed.
Okay, so there are some people out there, you know, that have right-handed reels for certain things and left-handed reels for...
Sure.
They're a whole nother level of messed up. But, you know, I was like, well, I'm not going to get rid of, you know, a dozen casting reels that I really like. So the easiest thing to do is flip left-handed.
There you go.
But yeah, so, and then I can also flip right-handed if I like really have to, but you do have to like, you have to flip and then you have to change hands. And it's like, there's so many bites that happen like right when that bait goes in the water. Mm-hmm. I mean, I cannot tell you how many times that you'll flip. And of course we'll be on the boat. We'll be like carrying on and talking and you get in a rhythm of like the bait, you pitch it, the bait goes through it. You like hop it once or twice or 10 times, or you just shake it or, you know, whatever the fish are telling you to do, because there's not always like a right or wrong, you know, like, oh, you have to put it in there and, you know, yo-yo it 10 times or you have to sit there and shake it. But there's so many times where you flip it in there and then you watch that bait disappear through the mat. And it's like, did it go through? Did it? Because you certainly didn't feel it go through and go boom and hit the bottom.
Right.
And there also didn't have any line that went out. And that's either like, you just better click that handle.
And set the hook.
And hit him or, you know, you check it. And that's one of the things too that I like about the flipping and pitching series is because they're, not only is the moderate fast good for like checking a fish, you can feel if he's there, you can feel if it's heavy and he doesn't feel you as much. But also, you know, there's times that we fight a fish under the mat and then he's pinned to the bottom of the mat, you know, like this. And if that rod is a fast action, that rod will relax a lot easier because you'll take the tension off of it. And that's all it really takes is, you know, you get a little slack and that's always the enemy in every fishing, but that fish is pinned against the mat and he goes slack and he has the ability to shake it out, or it's amazing how they can work that flipping hook out and then you still think you've got the fish and then you're just like, no, I'm just hung in the, you know, whatever grass that's in it, whether it's hyacinth mat or if it's Kissimmee grass. And it's just like, then you come up empty handed and that's like a real heartbreaker, especially if you felt a big head shake under that mat. But yeah, not to get too off topic, but I'm a right hand. What about your, do you have, are your lefties And then granted, we fish all different kind of retrieve reels, but how high, because I don't fish a reel that's faster than a 7-to-1. Mm-hmm. Do you have 8-to-1s? I know
I do.
Dad's got some 8-to-1s.
Yeah, I have a couple of Daiwa 8-to-1s.
Okay.
And I like them. I don't go any higher than that. You know, obviously there are reels out there that go up to, you know, I think the Revo Rocket is like
was like 9 or 10.
9 or 10. 9-1-to-1 or a 10-1-to-1. I'm in the 7-1-to-1 or you know, in the 7 category up to 8. 7 or 8. And I'm also not going to be going below that either. I'm not going to be going to a 6-1-to-1 or definitely not going to be going to a 5-1-to-1. That's
for cranking
rods and cranking rods only.
And I actually don't, other than throwing like an underspin, because I want a very, very particular thing for that. I'm with you. I don't fish. I don't think, other than that reel being a 6-3-to-1 or what Shimano's like 6-5. Yeah, I think my Revos are 6-3. Other than that reel being a 6-3, everything else that I have is a 7.
Right.
You know, and as Floridians, we're kind of typecasted as being fishing fast, you know, or they call it power fishing.
Sure.
You know, so yeah, I mean, I would say not only for the flipping part of it, but most of my stuff is 7-to-1.
Yeah.
You know, I think anything above that, you start to lose a little like handle turning torque.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's a good point too. Make sure, you know, whether, you know, Chris is obviously a big fan of Revo reels.
Yeah.
I've been using those for a long time. I'm a huge fan of Daiwa reels. You know, I've been using those for quite a long time now.
Now, I do have some baits though.
Baits are incredible as well.
I haven't, you know, I've got to work that collection.
Yeah, absolutely. But make sure you got a solid reel with a really good drag system in it. And obviously when you're flipping and pitching, lock that drag down. You do not want that drag to slip at all. If you know, the thing with flipping and pitching is when you get that bite and you know for sure that fish is on there and you set the hook, you only want that fish to come one way and that's right to you. Yeah. You don't want even that fish to have an inch to move away from you or go any direction besides right to the boat. So again, lock that drag down as tight as it'll go and make sure you're using a solid reel with a good drag system. That's really going to help you out.
And you know, if you haven't like set the hook on an 8 or a 9-pound fish under a mat, you think that, okay, well, I'm using this flipping stick that it takes 2 pounds to even flex it, and I'm using 60 or 65 pound braid, and I'm using a reel that the drag doesn't slip. And you think that the fish can't gain any ground, and then you set the hook sometimes and you're just like,
oh wow,
how did that fish even move an inch? And you, yeah, it does.
Yeah. Now obviously got to have a good line to go on your flipping setup. You guys have probably picked up on, you know, when Chris and I are talking about flipping and pitching, we pretty much default to, you know, heavy cover, I'll call it, right? But that doesn't mean that, you know, a flipping and pitching rod, even like an FP885, doesn't mean it always has to be heavy cover, right? Again, you can go down to a 1/2 ounce, whatever it might be. But again, when we're talking about flipping and pitching, it's typically going to be 60, 65 pound braid. I know a lot of guys go up to 80. I think that's a little bit overkill.
Yeah, I don't fish it.
I've really never had any problems with, you know, the Power Pro or even like a Daiwa J braid.
Yep.
Also use a lot of Sunline braid in the past. FX2 is a pretty solid braid.
Yep.
But again, you know, we're talking about heavy cover stuff and it's going to require a heavy cover braid to go along with it. Usually that 60 to 65 pound is the magic number.
For sure.
Now, if you're going lighter than that and you're just flipping docks or you're flipping sparse vegetation, especially with a lure that's down into the 1/2 ounce or 3/4, you could probably get away with like a 50 pound. But when we're doing hand-to-hand combat,
yeah,
it's one of those things, again, you don't want to give the fish an inch. And if that's, you know, dialing in your reel to the, you know, as good as it can be, making sure you have the appropriate line. You want to be able to horse these fish in. And, you know, again, if you got a 7-pounder on the other end and he's in a mat, you want that fish to come your way and get in the boat.
Out of that mat.
Exactly.
You know, and it's funny because we talk about line and when And you mentioned cover because I think it's a very, you know, specific thing. If you've ever punched mats, especially down here in Florida, I don't think it happens as much when they have like matted vegetation in other places, because the vegetation is different in terms of like how hard that grass is or like the noise that it makes. But I'm somebody that uses, like, I want to use a very smooth braid. So original Power Pro is a four carrier braid, which means there's four strands, two and two, you know, four strands that make up that braid. And that's why when you feel Power Pro, it's a little, it can be a little abrasive. Then Power Pro has a Super Slick that's an eight carrier, so it feels smoother. Daiwa J Braid has a four and an eight carrier. I, though, have gone to what's called a hollow core line. And I want to say, I don't remember who. I use the Cortland hollow core. It's a 16 carrier, and it is actually like hollow in the center. You can take a needle and like thread it. It's typically used for like offshore applications. I do not use that line to cast because most braids, four carriers and eight carriers, it's a round braid because it's a solid braid. They want it round so that it casts and it doesn't twist. But if you look at a hollow core line, most of the hollow cores are only for like offshore trolling, or they've migrated over to flipping because they're so smooth that when you're flipping it in a mat, you have like the line coming out of your rod tip and it goes to the mat, and then there's an angle that then it goes down, right? So you have it coming out of your rod tip, it creates that angle, and you're actually like rubbing the line because you're not fishing like ice fishing right out of, right down in the hole. You're actually, the line is rubbing against, you know, whatever vegetation that is. And if you have something like hydrilla or coontail or, you know, stuff like that, that's a very soft grass. Like that grass doesn't make any noise. But if you're in like a hyacinth mat or the, I forget what is the, I can't remember what that grass is called that used to, they have it down in like Kenansville and on Toho, and it's real hard and it's, you know, it's real viney.
Peppergrass?
No, not peppergrass, but it looks like peppergrass, but it's on the surface. Mm. And then it goes down. Anyway, that, the like stalks of that grass are, they're not wood, but they sure as heck feel like wood at times. So if you're using like a four carrier and you're moving the bait, you hear that like, rah, 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 like you're actually sawing that. When you have something like a hollow core or a higher carrier like Daiwa J Braid 8, it's very smooth because it doesn't make any noise. I think it makes a little bit of a difference, you know, if they don't hear that, because we all hear it. Like you set the hook and you hear that, like, which is a great noise. But I like to hear it after that I've already set the hook on that fish. The problem is that when you're working it, I think sometimes the sound transmission is there. But so if you don't have a hollow core, I would try it. You know, it's really smooth. It's like silk. It ties, you know, a snell knot incredibly well, which is, you have to use a snell knot. We're not going to even get into that argument. But yeah, it does really, really well. So, you know, in terms of line, it's expensive, but you're only using like 100 yards at a time. And actually you're only using like the first 25 yards of it. So if you take it off and you could turn it around and use the back half of it.
Yep.
But, I would spend the money on a line for sure.
Yeah. So we've talked about, you know, the reel and the line setup.
Yeah.
Obviously for the rod, you know, which we covered very heavily in the prior, you know, rod building episode. For a flipping rod, you know, just real quick, you're going to need somewhere in the range lengthwise of 7'4" up to maybe an 8-footer.
Yep.
Although I do think, like Chris mentioned earlier, even 7'10", 7'11", I think is a little bit overkill. You know, that 7'8", 7'9" is actually a pretty good sweet spot.
Some people are got to have an 8-footer, though.
Yeah, it's true. For action and power, you know, for action, you want to get a Modfast, right? And
yep.
That's, you know, again, best of both worlds from moderate and fast, right in the middle. You get the mod fast. So it keeps those fish pinned and it gets them out of those mats or that vegetation. Power-wise, you're looking at least a heavy, upwards of a 2X or even maybe even a 3X heavy.
Yeah.
So we've covered the rod now. We've covered the reel and line setup. We got to talk about the bait, right? That's what's going to get bit and get this fish hopefully in the boat for you. As you mentioned, snail knot, you know, the connection from your line to your hook.
Yeah.
It's got to be a snail knot. I know there's a lot of arguments about, you know, little snail knot, you know, might actually not get you a better hookup ratio. But I've had pretty good luck with a snail knot, not only hookup ratio, but also just durability with the knot and not having any issues with, you know, breakage of the knot or anything like that. Snail knot is the ticket.
Well, because, you know, there's no, I mean, there is a knot, but when you have that really, really heavy weight and it comes down and it, you know, interacts with the eye of the hook, there's no knot there. Mm-hmm. So you're not getting any kind of impact on that knot to weaken it, because the snail knot is obviously, you know, more of a like constricting knot that goes around the shank of the hook. So I think too, like you said, whether it makes the hook kick up and stick them better, or, you know, it's closer to 100%, but you don't have any, I mean, tungsten is one of the hardest materials out there. So what I don't want is I don't want the hardest material on earth impacting something like a fluorocarbon knot or a braid knot, because it's just gonna, it is gonna wear it, especially a weight that big. Now, if you have like an 1/8 ounce, I don't think that's,
yeah,
I don't think you have the impact, you know, that you necessarily have, but gosh, if you have an ounce and a half, then yeah,
sure. So as far as the lure setup goes, there's three main components, I feel like, or actually there's four. You gotta have a bobber stopper, right?
Oh,
you gotta have something that's gonna pin that tungsten weight in right above the hook. You really don't want that tungsten weight moving around too much. That bobber stopper, in some cases, especially with a heavier tungsten weight, you know, an ounce and a half or more, sometimes we use two bobber stoppers to really lock that weight against the eye of the hook. And lock it in there and make sure it doesn't move around.
I use the Sixth Sense PEG-X.
Yes, I do too.
I
buy them in the big bulk bags.
End of story. Yeah. We've got them here at downstairs in the tackle center. I don't care. You can argue all you want about the pegs that you used. It's not better than what Casey does at Sixth Sense, period.
They're quality. So whether it's one bobber stopper or two, again, you don't want that tungsten weight moving around. It is a lot of weight, and it can actually hinder sometimes your hookup ratio and actually—
Or just penetration into the mat.
You're right. So that's first. Second, obviously, is gonna be our tungsten weight, right? And we've talked about that several times already. It can vary, but when we're talking about punching, it's usually at least an ounce or an ounce and a quarter. Most common is going to be an ounce and a half. And then if the vegetation is really, really thick, you can go up to that 2 ounce tungsten. Now, if we're just pitching around sparse vegetation or reeds, again, we can go down to the sub 1 ounce. We can go 3/8, a half, 5/8, or even 3/4. Now, so you got your bobber stopper, we got our tungsten weight. You got to have a hook, right? So, and flipping hooks, they can be, at least they used to be, we've got some better, you know, options now. Back when we were, you know, fishing pretty heavy, you know, 2012 to 2014 time frame, back then we actually used to kind of custom make some of our own hooks.
Yeah.
Whether, you know, it was maybe the hook was great, the gauge was good, but maybe the keeper just was not right. So we would go in and use a bobbin from our fly tying arsenal and you know, kind of makeshift a keeper on the hook shank that would be more durable. We would use things like, you know, a little piece of heat shrink tubing, yes, really bolster that keeper and that hook to be as durable as it could be. Now, more recently, you know, especially with Gamagatsu and Owner and even the, you know, the standby Hack Attack hook, a lot of these have progressed over the past few years, and the hooks are solid. the gauges is spot on, and the keepers have improved drastically. So you don't really have to come up with your own custom keeper anymore. The ones that come on these flipping hooks now are pretty good.
Well, and you know, too, back when we were doing it, you know, the Hack Attack was the hook. It had a kind of a funny sizing, you know, like if you got a Hack Attack and a 3 or a 4.0, and then you match that with, like, you know, a Gamagatsu super flipping hook, sizing wasn't always there. But the one thing, too, that you see a lot of now is a welded eye. We actually, like when you said, we would make the hook keeper. The hook keeper on the Hack Attack was great, but the eye was not welded, which means the hook of the eye is bent around, and then it's like just touching the shank of the hook, and it's not like fully welded or connected there. What can happen is if that's not coming all the way around and touching perfectly, you can get a gap in there, and that can actually cause abrasion or breaking. So there were times that, you know, I'd put it in a fly bobbin, and all you have to do is create a little collar. You know, I would thread wrap a little collar and then add some finish there to create sort of a welded eye, because you can cause a problem. So when we talk about all these like weird little nuances, it's down to that far. But yeah, so many flipping hooks now that are out. I mean, owner's got a jungle hook, and there's all kinds of stuff. And now you do see more like, oh, that's a welded eye, or they have it filled in with epoxy, or you can do it with JB Weld or something like that. But to keep that eye welded, and they do that because we're all using Snell knots.
Right. Last but not least, we got to talk about the flipping bait. And this is where, I mean, you want to talk about endless options. Oh, man.
And everybody's copied somebody else and done this. And
there's the standbys, right? And you and I both have fished Gambler for a long time now.
Oh, yeah.
And as well as most anglers in Florida, especially, or the Southeast at least, Gambler is an absolute staple, not only for flipping baits, but also other baits too. But, you know, as far as just profiles and styles of baits, obviously a beaver style bait, you know, whether it's the original Reaction Innovations beaver style bait.
Yeah, the sweet beaver,
or even some newer variations. You know, one that I had some pretty good luck down at Okeechobee recently was the Crush City Bronco Bug, which it's got a little bit different profile. It's not a huge bait. But it definitely has a little bit of an altered design than most other flipping baits out there. It's got some kind of thick paddles on the side, and really allows that bait to have some different action in the water that other traditional beaver baits do not have. But as we mentioned, you know, even earlier, the BB Cricket is a standby in the wintertime for a smaller profile. The options for flipping baits and punching baits or pitching baits, endless. Now, again, that's going to be a setup if you're using a flipping hook and, you know, a beaver style or any plastic bait. We can also flip and pitch with a jig, very popular, you know, in some of the lakes down here, like Okeechobee, Kissimmee Chain, Harris Chain. Flipping a jig in grass or around reeds, it can really get some big fish in the boat.
Yeah, and we're flipping like a true flipping jig. Not one that's just like, oh, well, this jig is the one that we fished, you know, in Alabama on a rock pile or whatever. No. We're fishing most of the time, it's a double weed guard jig. The Medlocks, you know, that family, they made that jig famous. And then, of course, you got a double weed guard. It comes in a number of different sizes. I fish it in a 3/4 most of the time, and then, or in a 1 ounce. But I don't fish a jig in like matted vegetation as much as I do around like pencil reeds and stuff. So I use the FP885 with a 3/4 ounce, but I'm still most of the time using the same flipping style beaver bait that I would rig in just a Texas style, which is just a weedless bobber stop with a tungsten and a beaver bait. I am just using that bait as a jig trailer on the Medlock. So, I mean, for me, yes, I'm like you, I like a Cricket, but I would say I use a Cricket in the wintertime, I use a Gambler burner craw all the time, as well as a D-bomb. The missile baits D-bomb is, there's a baby D-bomb, but I use the regular D-bomb. Mm-hmm. And there's just something about the way that the ribs are on it, and the it just, I don't know, it holds like air bubbles against it, so it creates like a bubble trail and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I don't go anywhere without a D-bomb, that's for sure.
Yeah, and like I said, there's a million different plastics that you can use for flipping and pitching, and of course, tons of different colors. You can boil it down to be pretty simple, though, you know, especially if you're in some darker or stained water, black and blue or June bug. That's going to be two go-to colors. If you're in a little bit clear water or even fishing outside of Florida up in some of the, you know, northern lakes that are typically stay clear year-round, you probably need to go with more of a natural color, watermelon red.
Green pumpkin.
A green pumpkin. Anything that's more natural color is just going to get you probably get you more bites. But yeah, as far as, you know, flipping and pitching baits, to me, there's kind of two categories. You're probably going to be flipping, you know, something like a beaver style bait or a creature style bait, or you got a jig in hand. There's kind of two different ways to go there. A million different options in between, all the different size options. But that's kind of the two main categories, I guess you could say, for flipping and pitching baits. So
for sure.
All right, we've covered rod, reel, line, bait selection. Any other tips you want to toss out there as far as maybe any pro tips for your style of flipping and pitching, or maybe something that'll get these guys more bites on the water?
I think a lot of people do not listen to the fish as well as they should. And I don't really have like a great or a funny story, but anybody that follows bass fishing knows Gerald Swindle. And he has a very funny story to like drive that point home. And he laughs because, you know, you got two guys fishing on a boat that, let's say, they're like, man, today's the day, the weather, the time, everything's perfect. We're going to go down the shoreline and we're going to flip this jig and we're going to kill him. And 3 hours into the day, they hadn't got a bite, but that's what they're doing, and they're flipping the jig, and that's how they're going to catch a big one. And his buddy ends up, you know, snagging a limb, and, you know, he's pulling it, and he breaks it off, and of course, your line gets buried on itself, and he reties, and he goes to flip it, and it catches, and he's like, golly. And he takes it, and he turns around and throws it, takes that bait and slings it out in the middle of the pocket behind him to stretch the line out. And he starts reeling up, catches a 6-pounder, and goes, golly, can you believe the luck of that? Man, I don't know. I'm telling you, we're going to catch him this way, though. And you just threw out in the pocket yeah. with a jig in deeper water, and you just catch a 6-pounder after you've gotten no bites in 3 hours, flipping laydowns. But by golly, you're going to just, that's how you're going to catch him.
Yeah.
And you don't listen to the fish. So that's an exaggerated story, but there it's true. When you are flipping and you do something very specific or something happens, either they eat it right at the top of the mat, or they eat it at the bottom, or they eat it on a certain movement, or you hold it under the mat and shake it and they eat it. There's a lot of very small details that can go unnoticed when you are punching mats and doing things that you can get in a very like a methodical rhythm and ignore those things, because you're just going down a grass line and you're like in and out and in and out and in and out and in and out. But you really need to pay attention and let the fish kind of tell you. And that's with everything sort of, but with flipping and pitching, it's very specific, because, you know, we've had days where they only eat it on the drop, mm-hmm. or they only eat it when you hold it at the surface. So yeah, that would be my tip is, We've taught you exactly all the gear you need, but we can't teach you that, because that's a real in the moment thing.
It is. The one pro tip I will leave with you guys before we close out here is, and it's kind of along the same line that you're talking about, but a little bit different, is, you know, make sure you guys understand you're typically fishing shallow water when you're flipping and pitching. You know, we're typically, we'll say under maybe, you know, less than 5 foot, right? And in a lot of cases, we're you know, 1 to 2, maybe 2.5, 3 foot. That water is very shallow, and any movement or any disruption that you make when you're flipping and pitching more than likely that fish is going to hear it or feel it, right? They're going to feel the vibration. So, you know, if you knock something on the boat and it causes a vibration to go out, you know, I can't say for sure you're going to spook a fish or two, but watch what you're doing on your boat. And not only that, but when you're flipping and pitching, and you know, especially in mats or even reeds, any kind of sparse vegetation, make sure you're trying to pitch that bait as close to the reed as possible without touching it,
right?
And that could be the case of, you know, if you flip in there and you hit that reed and it shakes, you're probably going to, you know, disrupt that fish or the fish that are in the area, and they're not going to bite your bait, right?
Yeah.
Keep it as natural as possible. And not only, you know, or another part of that is when you do flip in there, try to make the most silent approach of that bait entering the water.
You'll be Olympic diver.
Right. Don't, you know, just kind of throw it up in the air and let that bait splash when it hits the water. You want to be natural. You want to flip it in there and cause the least disruption, not only to the vegetation that you might be fishing or the grass or the reeds, but also the water itself. The less disruptions, whether it's on the boat or even in the water around the vegetation, the more bites that you're probably going to get. So
yeah,
we'll leave you with that. And
I'm ready to go flipping now.
Yeah, right?
Let's shut it down.
The juices flowing.
That's
so,
it.
And that's going to wrap it up for this episode of Build to Bite. Make sure you guys, you know, like and subscribe to the Mudhole Custom Tackle channel. We've got a lot more of these videos coming down the pipeline. So
yeah.
And we want to listen to what you guys have to say. So drop us a comment below if you have any suggestions on what techniques, what kind of rods that you guys want us to highlight. And we'll definitely check those out and make sure we try to fit them in one of the next videos.
Perfect. We'll see you guys next time here on Build to Bite. I'm Chris Adams. And that's Hunter McCamey. We'll see y'all next time.